Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity, the leading podcast for residential service contractors, sponsored by Service Roundtable and hosted by David Heimer.
Hi, this is David Heimer. Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity. I have really been looking forward to this interview because Danielle Putnam is one of my favorite people in our industry. She is great. She's nice. She's kind. She's fun to talk to, and she's really smart. Danielle is the president of the New Flat Rate. It's a flat rate system designed for plumbing, electrical, and HVAC contractors. She's well known and well respected in our industry. She was the president of Women in HVACR. She writes for a number of industry publications, including our own Comanche Marketing. And side note here, I really love her articles because I think what makes an article good is that it's fun and entertaining and it's thought-provoking. And Danielle always hits both those marks. And then there's this. At Service World Expo this year, Danielle was named Woman of the Year. So, Danielle Putnam, welcome to Profiles in Prosperity.
Wow, David, what an intro. That was so kind of you. And it's really a privilege to be here. I have been a fan of Profiles in Prosperity for a long time. And so I am definitely a listener and have learned so much about everybody that you interview because of the questions that you've been asking them and just everybody that you feature. So it's kind of really neat to be here, being a fan and now all of a sudden being a guest. It's cool. So thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. And congratulations on Woman of the Year. What a great honor that is and very well deserved.
Oh, thank you. You know, it really is an honor. And the first couple of days I was like, oh, it's such an honor. Thanks so much. And now finally I'm like, you know what? I worked my tail off and now I can I really appreciate that. So thank you.
So I always like to hear the backstory of how people got where they are. So tell us how you got into this industry.
David, I was born and bred. My dad was a contractor. His dad was a contractor. My uncles are contractors. My brothers are contractors. So born and bred, why I've always stayed in the industry is because contracting is business and I love business. I love family business. I love small business, startups, growing, the constant climb to try to be a bigger company. And you see that in contracting, all those facets of business. And so being born and bred in it is what brought me here, but the appeal of everything it offers is what has kept me here.
How did you come about to create the New Flat Rate?
You know, here I say that it kept me here, the appeal kept me here, but I actually did leave the industry for a little while. After high school, you know, I worked in our family business, our family contracting business through high school, and then I went out to Bible school in Texas for 4 years, and I worked in a marketing department of a very large international ministry, and we took students on mission trips all around the world, and so I've been to over 25 countries and done a lot of missions all over and love that. But at this organization in particular, I learned a lot about marketing and business. But then after that, ended up in California working for a tech startup in 2005. We went public and backed into a shell in 2007. We were a penny stock company and I got to pitch stockbrokers all over the US. And it was a really great learning experience and time and season in my life. But because I was still young, I was in my early 20s and probably in over my head, of course, you know, I wouldn't have admitted it at the time, but I'm sure I was. So who did I call for advice? Of course, I would call my contractor dad very often for advice from California. And hey, you know, we're going here, we're doing this, and this is what's going on. What do you think, dad? What should I do? And so he'd always, you know, give me advice and help me out. And, you know, of course, we've always been best friends. And I'm so thankful for that, for having that great relationship with my dad. But at that time, he would talk about his business as well and the struggles and the feast of famine and what was going good and what was going bad. And he had ideas. And when I was young growing up, we were the largest contracting company in Northwest Georgia in our area, in our community. And so it was heating and air, electrical and plumbing. But then after I had left for a while, just the toil and the struggles of business and trying to keep business going and profitable, it really, you know, a lot of people know my dad, Rodney Cope. And so they've heard his story. He can tell it way better than I do. I'm kind of doing injustice right now. But there was a point finally he sold off the plumbing and electrical sides and downsized the HVAC so that it was just my brother, Matt, and my sister Stacy, the two of them, and then my dad moved back home to my parents' house in the garage in the basement and were running their service business out of the basement. And that year alone, the three of them did $1 million in, you know, sales and revenue. And they were so much more profitable than they'd ever been. And he'd ever been in business before. And so he thought, oh my gosh, you know, how did we do this? And he began to go and pull every service ticket and analyze and analyze. So it was these phone calls that we were having, David, between my dad and I, as he was analyzing these tickets, that he began to discover and come up with the idea for the new flat rate. So I became involved. This is a long story short. You asked how did I come to create and be a part of the new flat rate.
But as he was talking
about it, you know, I was like, yeah, Dad, that's a good idea. You should do that. You should do that. You know, I'm a cheerleader. I like to encourage people. I wasn't really a cheerleader, but I like to encourage people, you know, you should do that. And so I'll never forget where I was one night in California. We were going through another merger. We were being bought out by a large company that was traded on NASDAQ. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've made it. Life can't get any better. You know, I'm going to be a part of the merger and going into the new company. And I just thought it was so awesome. And I was going to a friend's house and my dad and my mom called me at night. And I pulled over on the side of the road and he says, you know, Danielle, I'm calling to tell you, I'm going to do it. I'm going to start this new company, but I need your help. I need you to do it with me. And if you do it with me, I'm going to give you half. And I was like, oh man, you know, here I am. You know, life is so great. And I was loving California. I had great friends, great company, and just loving life. But my dad called. And when your dad calls, you know, I knew, David, no matter what, I would have so much regret if I didn't do it and take that risk and that chance at that moment to go and help my dad. And I also knew, you know, when it comes to taking risk, not to have a plan B, but I kind of was like, you know, if we make it, we make it. But if we don't, I can come back to California later. You know, it can't be that hard to get back here, you know. And two, when it comes to risk, I was not married and I did not have three children at the time. And so it was kind of like, all right, yeah, I can put everything on the line and we'll go for this. And I was able to put everything on the line. So on that phone call, you know, my dad says, Danielle, you know, you can have half the business, half the company, and I'll pay you a salary of $75,000. And I thought, my dad doesn't have any money. He'll have to mortgage the house to get that $75,000 to pay me. So that means I'm going to be working for free.
So, right.
So I packed up my stuff and moved back to Georgia, moved in with a brother and spent that year, that was in 2011. We spent that whole year developing and building the new flat rate. I blew through all my savings, maxed out all my credit cards. When I flew back home, I'll never forget this too, David. That first night I get back, my parents pick me up from the airport. My dad was excited, you know, because here I am. I'm coming to help him start this business and we're going to do it together. And so we get to the garage at the house and he's like, hey, how about this space? And it's the garage with the boat and the four-wheelers. And I was like, yeah, this is fine. This is fine. He's like, well, how about this space? And, you know, there's a little area cleaned up on the side. I was like, hey, this is great. He's like, walk back here. And we walked back to the back of the garage and there was this room that he had built and cleaned up. And it was like you call world headquarters. This was our new world headquarters for the new flat rate. And it was a room that, you know, was just four walls, one window, but it was clean, carpet on the floor, walls were painted, and one circle table in the middle. And that was going to be our headquarters. I was like, okay, we have a space. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So we went in there and we went to
work. Starting our business, it was like that. It's exciting, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. And you know how we did it too is I took 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, just copy paper. And every day we'd be in here and we'd be powwowing at our little circle table. And I'd take those pieces of paper with tape and I would go and I'd stick them up on the walls all the way around that room, you know, because we need to build the product and we need to market it. We need a website, all the different things and put them up. And so we just kind of had our mind mapping taped to the wall. And by the end of 2011, we actually had a price book, the new flat rate, our HVAC book, and we had beta tested it in 8 different cities and states with small and large companies and proven a process and a product. And we were helping those people to make more money. And so by 2012, we were on a roll. And by then we'd been able to repay our savings and our credit cards. And that was all she wrote. We were able to kind of keep going. And we knew that we were onto something that was going to make a difference and help people.
Wow. What a great startup story. That's awesome. You know, I've been a big believer in flat rate for as long as I've been in the industry. Are there still a lot of companies that are not using flat rate pricing, or is the problem more that people just aren't using it properly?
Great question, David. It's still shockingly 50-50 of people using time and material methods versus flat rate, which is shocking. But the majority of those flat raters developed their own system. So it's contractors that were frustrated and needed a good pricing system. And, you know, so they have created their own, whether it's Excel version or these days in their software, and they kind of have a standard flat rate. And that wasn't the problem that we went to help solve and why we started the new flat rate. It wasn't to have a flat rate price book took like a parts catalog. It was to solve the problem of the money being left on the table. When a technician goes out on a service call, they're leaving on average $1,200 a week on the table. And the owner is frustrated because they cannot put enough sales training into that technician, 80% of them anyway, to get them to pick up that $1,200 a week and bring it home, because the homeowners want to give it to them because there are more problems in the home, but the technicians are not salesmen by their DNA, the majority of them. And so the new flat rate was to help solve that problem and create a selling system, an automatic selling system that would do that for the technician. So they could just go in and present 5 price points on any repair. And it's like flat rate price points, but there's 5 options, like good, better, best, and even better and bestest. And when the customer sees those 5 price points, then they get to take the power in their own hands and they get to buy and they don't have to feel the sales pressure. And so then it creates a win-win scenario because the customer chooses the level of service that they want. The technician gets to do a great job of servicing and repairing and not having to sell. And then the contractor is able to take more revenue in for those jobs. That $1,200 isn't left on the table and it's going back into the business so that they can start to grow from a position of strength with their cash flow.
I hear so many good things about that and the impact that it has made for companies. Hey, I want to turn our attention to something a little bit different here for a moment. I'd like to talk about diversity in our industry. You know, women make up about 51% of the population. And while we have a lot of women in the offices in our industry, we see very few in field sales, women techs, women plumbers. It feels like we're seeing more women owners. And I don't have any real statistics around it. It seems like we could be doing more to attract women to the industry. Do you think that's a problem? Do you think that companies in our industry should consider what to do to attract women? And if so, what are your thoughts about that?
I've been asked that a lot, especially through my involvement with women in HVACR, which if you don't mind, I'm going to do a shout out for womeninhvacr.org. It's just a fantastic tribe of women in the industry. And so I've been in that group for a really long time. And because of my association there, people ask me, how do we bring more women in? I definitely think it's a problem, David. I think it's a problem because there is room for them here. And over time, especially now, I think it's such a great industry where men and women are working really well together and are really respecting each other. And my experience has been very positive. You know, I know that there are all different kinds of stories and people, but in my experience, all of the men in the industry that have paved the way have always been very welcoming to me. And, you know, we're able to work together and collaborate together. So yes, we need more women because it is majority men. And it starts by letting them know that we have a place for them and that this is a career path that includes them. So all of us, it takes all of us, our messaging and marketing. Hey, my company's hiring and we're hiring women too. It could even be that simple. I think that the perception, you know, of, hey, it's a man's industry, the trades are for men, that perception has to change. And it starts with all of us because we've tried. People have tried, right? There's been different movements and initiatives of, hey, let's try this or let's try that to get more women in here. And it's got to be more collective. It's got to be all of us opening up and saying, hey, we need more people anyway in the space right now. So let's make sure that women and all kinds of diverse backgrounds and people know that they are welcome here and start inviting them in. It's like an easy place to start. It doesn't sound like any strategy or anything. It's just simply welcoming them and inviting them.
Do you think there's anything specifically that contractors could do to make their businesses more attractive to women techs, women plumbers, et cetera?
A movement that I'm really seeing right now is flexibility. You know, women, I got to be careful with what I say here, but so often women are the primary caretakers in the home. And so we need flexibility with our children and our work schedules and to not feel judged by that. And so when it comes to female technicians too, to be able to carve out a flexible schedule, for example, hey, your service van is going to be running from 9 until 3 or, you know, 7 until 2, for example. I know several contractors that are right now, they're sharing a van. So there will be X amount of service vans and then they split it between people. And so Monday, Tuesday, one tech uses it and it gets cleaned out and flipped over on Wednesday and used by a different tech on Thursday, Friday. And it's been really neat to watch that happening. And so other companies are trying that when it comes to, you know, somebody might be using the van for first shift and somebody else might be using it for second shift. And so changing our mentality, it's easy to get stuck into the thinking of, standard business in the office is 8 to 5, or service technician business the day is 7 to 7 or 7 to 10. But we can't do that anymore because the competitiveness in the workplace has changed, especially in the last 2 years, hasn't it? So people now, it's almost like we have to cater to the employees now more than we used to, and they want that flexibility. They want that time. So when it comes to hiring technicians, that's a big piece of it, is allowing them to not have to be on the front lines and take all the bullets all the time and working all those terrible over hours. Now, you know, there are definitely a lot of people that want the overtime, but there's a large majority who do not. They want that family time, and we need to give them that flexibility.
Yeah, great point. So you work with a lot of contractors. You write for the industry publications. And by the way, in the favorite, I like all your articles, but I always especially like it when it's about your daughter.
Those are funny. Thank you.
But, you know, you've seen a lot of successful contractors. You've seen a lot of unsuccessful contractors. And I know this is kind of a broad-based request, but give me your list of the top 3 recommendations for contractors. So contractors going to be successful, what should they think about?
You know, a book I just read, it's called Built to Sell. Have you read it?
Yep.
Heard of it?
Yep.
Okay, awesome.
Great book. John Warlow, I think, right?
Yes, that is correct. And when I read it, I couldn't help but to think of contracting in that sometimes we think we can be all things to all people, and we're always looking for all the opportunities in the home, or, hey, I have a work crew here so they can fix this and they can fix that and they can do all this stuff. And when we do that, we often put ourselves out there for more liability than we mean to. Because what if we have our team, you know, building a deck and that's not what they do? You know, they're doing something else, but it's also not scalable. And by scalable, it's not that we all need to be $100 million businesses. It's that, don't we want a little bit more freedom in our lives? So as business owners, if you want some more freedom to go fishing more often, then having the processes and principles in place in your business that are a little bit more scalable to do that. I learned a lot from Built to Sell. And so I'd like to recommend that book to contractors with that in mind of, hey, let's not try to just be everything, but maybe let's specialize a little bit more in the trades that we want to be in so that we can be more scalable for more freedom. Number 2 is pricing for profits. You know, not trying to just take every service call to get there. We have a product called Fluid Dispatching where it's, you know, hey, looking at your dispatch board all throughout the day and always being very fluid and changing and looking for the opportunities and not just saying yes to everybody. And so with pricing for profits, making sure that you're pricing right and you're raising your prices enough throughout the year as the materials and the shortages and everything that's going on right now, really watching those pricing and pricing for profit. And I can't help but to say, definitely offer a menu of pricing, more than one price on every job. And then 3, David, if it'd be okay, I have a new hiring matrix and a job scorecard that I am finding to be so helpful, and I'd love to offer it to anybody that's interested. And the reason that I think this is important for contractors to know is so often we hire out of emotion. We're stressed out. We want more technicians and, oh my gosh, I can't find anybody and there's a national hiring crisis. What do I do? But we have to take a breath, step back, go to a coffee shop, go somewhere else. Don't go into your office where you're going to get, you know, bombarded, having to be the emergency fire putter outer. Instead, give yourself the gift of being present in your mind to think for a minute and strategize that position. What position do you really need? What do you need that person to be able to be responsible for so that you can measure and track it? What kind of income are they going to be tied to? And once you can define that, then you can go and actually get your correct and right person for your company. And studies have shown, it's not me, I mean, studies have proven that when you hire not on emotion, like I think it's 90% more successful of a hire for your company. So I've got this hiring matrix that helps me to identify the holes so I don't make emotional decisions. I'd love to send it to anybody that's interested.
Well, great. And speaking of that, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you or learn more about the new flat rate or get that hiring matrix, how would they do that?
My email, David, is Danielle, Danielle, at menupricing.com. They, of course, could go to our website, thenewflatrate.com. My cell phone's probably listed on there too. Call anytime, email anytime, even if you just want to chat business. I love talking about business anytime.
Great. All right, Danielle, thank you so much for doing this. This has been fabulous. It's always a pleasure to get to talk to you, and I look forward to seeing you at some industry event, maybe Service World Expo in the future.
Yes, actually, before that, hopefully at Barefoot Roundtable in the spring.
There you go. Thank you very much. All right.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're always looking for good ideas and interviews for our podcast. If you have an idea or maybe you think you should be interviewed, just shoot an email to profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. That's profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. If you think what we're doing has any value, it would be very helpful if you would give us a great rating on iTunes. Thanks for your support. Hope to see you again soon. Bye.